Welcome to Eugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Eugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Eugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Eugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad Culp. It's July 18th. We're here in the studio. I've got Sam Grass and Trevor Walford with me this morning. And it's a great day here in Atlanta. And it's a great day for Sam in particular. Tell us why, Sam.
I'm just a great person. No, I didn't want to get into this. I knew you were going to. I'm leaving tomorrow to go to Canada on a fishing trip with my son.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
That's called vacation.
22 hours.
And unlike when you go on vacation, I call you about four times a day, you're not going to be able to do that with me.
So Sam's been regaling us and entertaining us this morning with these stories about what's going to happen. He's going off into the wilderness, planes, trains, and canoes. And
bears and mosquitoes.
Bears and mosquitoes and no deodorant and no running water.
There's plenty of running water. Now, whether it's drinkable or not is another question.
Yeah, boy, sounds like a load of fun.
Well, again, everyone has his own thing, and you know me, I'm not the beach person like you are.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to let you know that I took out an extra insurance policy on you. So in the event that you don't come back to us, at least I can pay the bills.
I hope I can make someone well.
We have a great show this morning, and this morning we have two ladies from the American Cancer Society. We have Andrea Williams and Erin Elliott. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
How are y'all this morning?
Good.
Great.
It's nice to be here.
Oh, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. Typically, we start our show by having y'all just give us a little bit of background on yourselves, where you're from, where you went to school, how you got to be where you are. So who wants to go first?
I will. This is Erin Elliott. My parents moved to Austin, Texas in the 70s, and that's where I was born and raised. And I lived there for about, 33 years, and I basically grew up with Austin, and because it's a much, much different city now than it was then, and I always enjoyed helping people. I was in math and science when I was younger, and then when I went to college, I decided I was tired of math and science, and I wanted to really, really help people, and so I went into psychology and social work.
Did you go to UT Austin then?
For my master's, I did. For my undergrad, I went to Southwest Texas, which is now called Texas State University in San Marcos. So it's about an hour and a half south of Austin.
And Brad asked that question because he has an allegiance to Baylor now. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
His son.
I see. I went to a Baylor game once, and they completely beat us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's a big rivalry, of course, with UTA, so, but carry on.
So how did you get out from Texas and social work to Atlanta, Georgia?
Sure. Well, I started out working with high school kids, and I worked with people that had HIV and AIDS, and I decided that medical social work would be great. And I started working at the American Cancer Society in 2003. So this coming up December will be my 9-year anniversary. And I started in Austin. We have our national call center, which we can talk about later, which is housed there. And that's where I started. And then about 2008, I decided to move here, which is where our national headquarters is. And I am now the patient resource navigator at Northside Hospital, helping cancer patients there.
Interesting point. Did you know that the headquarters for the American Cancer Society was located here in Atlanta? I did not.
I did.
But you're better educated. I was educated in West Virginia, obviously.
Obviously.
Okay, enough of this. Andrea, tell us about yourself.
So I'm originally from Cambridge, Massachusetts. I started out in engineering. Ooh. So I've been associates in electrical engineering with Women's Technical Institute. And I started working after I graduated at Analog Devices, and I was a quality control supervisor for, I want to say, about 5 years. And I noticed that I really liked talking to folks about what was going on with their lives and in their health. And so I said to myself, you know, I need to think about what kind of career I really want, because when you're young, you really don't know. And that was in the beginning of the 80s. And so I decided that I would start to take classes. So I took classes at Middlesex Community College and loved it. And it was in mental health, group dynamics. And so that's where my education began. I have a lot of work experience. And I started to do a lot of work in nursing homes and rehabs and places like that. And then I saw an ad for a disparities navigator in Boston. And it was the first, one of the first thoughts after navigation came out. And they wanted somebody who would look at disparities within health for people of color. So they hired me as a navigator at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And I ran their program there and developed it. So that was my beginnings.
Interesting. Two science majors move into social work, into psychology. Interesting dynamic there. Just for our listeners, one of you at a very high level, and I mean a 30,000-foot level, tell us what the American Cancer Society is all about.
This is Andrea. The American Cancer Society is about saving lives and having more birthdays. We provide tons of programs and services to patients and their families. We take care of patients as best as we can, and we want folks to know that we're there. So that's basically what we are.
I think that was a very appropriate answer about saving lives. You cannot get more direct and clear than that statement. Mm-hmm. Aaron, your position or title is Patient Resource Navigator. And though you are associated and employed by the American Cancer Society, you have a liaison position with Northside Hospital here in Atlanta, and Andrea with DeKalb Medical Center here in Atlanta. What is your function as it relates to Northside Hospital?
Great. We are housed at our respective hospitals, and so I'm right there at Northside. I'm there every day, and we receive referrals from nurses, from social workers, anyone who thinks that we might be able to help them. And the types of services that I provide is if someone needs transportation to the radiation or to chemo, or if they... they need a support group, or they need financial assistance. Sometimes people lose their jobs when they find out that they have cancer, or their husband or wife might have lost their job, and they need help. And sometimes patients are uninsured and they need help. There's just a lot of different avenues that we explore, and I don't just talk to them one time. I follow up with them. I talk to their families. It's kind of an ongoing process, and they know that they can call me when they need help.
Andrea, obviously you are liaisoned at DeKalb Medical Center. DeKalb has staff social workers. How do you interact with those social workers?
And in particular, they have, you know, a pretty well-defined and established cancer support team. Yes. So how does that work?
How do you interact with them?
So a lot of the times I get referrals from all areas of the hospital when it relates to cancer. I work closely with the inpatient social worker there. I work with the chaplains. Our cancer center is really unique because we have about 5 different chaplains that we work with, and they run the majority of the groups there. And so I'll get patients from those areas also. I think that's basically it. I get some from the nurse navigators that are there. We have about 4 nurse navigators within the breast center, and then we have navigators within the hospital, and there's about 4 of those also. So referrals can come from anywhere.
Is your role more counseling or providing resources and assistance?
It's a unique role, I would say, because we are there for resources. We give patients resources. When we see that somebody is really having a hard time, we will get the social workers and the chaplains involved. Sometimes we're the first folks that actually touch the patient on their journey, within their journey. And so we have to really know exactly, specifically what the needs are, because they will come out in conversations.
How do people find you?
So we have a lot of logos there in all the different departments, in radiation, in the main center. We have packets we send out to newly diagnosed patients. Folks can find us through our 1-800 with ACS, emails. So folks are always looking, and they're
us. There's a lot of PR that's involved in just getting information into people's hands so they know that they can even call you.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I think our listeners probably have a well-established idea of what the American Cancer Society is. Is there anything going on within the American Cancer Society, a new initiative or new research or a new program of that nature?
Excuse me. This is Erin, and we are having new programs all the time. Mm-hmm. We have our established ones, such as Look Good, Feel Better, where patients can come in and talk with the cosmetologist and get hair and makeup techniques, and they really, really love that. But we do have a new, we've been in the business of doing huge studies over the years. Advocacy is something that we really do, and we also fund research. And there is a cancer prevention study 3 that we are doing now. The American Cancer Society did one. It was Cancer Prevention Study 1. They also call it CPS 1, and they also did CPS 2. And now we're getting as many people as we can for the third one. Just to give you an example, there were thousands of people across the country that had signed up for the last one, and we followed them over a period of years, and that's when we learned that a lot of cancers could be prevented through diet and exercise. And the one that we're doing now is even going to be taking it a step further, and we're in the process of recruiting now. And we'll be following people for the next 10 years. You just can't have had cancer before and be over 30 to 65, I believe. And we'll be following them. And it's very exciting because we do a little blood test too. And then over the years, we're going to kind of find out, okay, what are people's lifestyles? If they do get cancer, if they don't, we'll be able to track that, which is really nice.
So for our listeners, I'm assuming you're looking for participants. So at the end of the show, we'll give them information how they can reach out to you if they'd like to be considered for this.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Andrea, I'm assuming from what Erin said that the new thought process in cancer prevention and or treatment has to do in a holistic type of approach. Specifically, where I'm leading is diet. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to us of what some of these findings have been as it relates to the type of diets that are high risk for cancer or vice versa?
Okay. Folks know that majority of folks know that a high content of fatty sources like meats and things like that are the cause of cancer, or can be the cause, one of the leading causes of cancer. Of course, smoking is another leading cause of cancer. And so we have a dietitian with the American Cancer Society who can help folks figure that out for themselves as far as a prevention. Also, anybody who does have cancer, they can call the 1-800 number and speak to a dietitian. We also have the dietitian within DeKalb Medical who will sit down with patients when they're diagnosed and actually come up with a way of a proper diet for them while they're going through treatment, because chemotherapy can be very harsh on you when you're going through it, and you don't feel like you want to eat the same food you ate before, can't tolerate them. So there is a way to combat that, and the dietitians are the ones that look at that.
Do most people find a startling change in their diet is required, or is it often just tuning? Or
I always tell patients it depends on them. Each person's body is different, and you really have to listen to yourself when you're going through cancer to figure out what foods you like. So there isn't anything specifically. That's why I always point people towards a dietitian.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is not something that you would, you know, jump on the internet and just kind of surf around and figure out on your own. It's really important to get some experience and skill behind the...
Right. Because a lot of people do get on the internet. The minute they find out they have cancer, that's the first place where they go. And a lot of times you'll hear physicians say, please don't do that. Come to me. And I always tell my patients that they really, really need to have a conversation with their doctors about their cancer, because that's the person who's going to be taking care of them. Educate. I always say it's a relationship between the doctor and the patient, and they have to build that relationship and that trust.
I think it's a good point. People understand, or they get a diagnosis of cancer, and it's what you said, they go out and they gather all this information off the internet, and a lot of it is very absolute type of information, black and mm-hmm. white, so to speak. And that's not the way that you need to approach. As you said, though, meat and specifically red meat has a propensity for cancer, mm-hmm. there's a certain level of protein that you need from that source. So there's a moderation is where I'm going with this that you need to try to work towards.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Why is it that you do what you do? I think you both spoke a little bit of that in the introduction, but let's develop that. What gets you up in the morning and gets you to the hospitals? Erin?
I think for me is the look on their face when I tell them that help is available, because a lot of times patients and their families don't even know what to ask for. So when I do speak with them, I tell them there is transportation, there is financial assistance, and they're just floored because they weren't expecting any of that. And also just sitting with them, especially when they just found out that, you know, that they had cancer, and just knowing that I'm there for them at such a crucial part of their lives is very meaningful for me. And so when I get up in the morning, I know that I'm making a difference in people's lives. That's very tangible because they're in front of me, and I'm able to give them certain things that and tools that they didn't have before.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think people have to understand that there are just a multitude of resources available, so much so that as an individual, if you go try to wade through that yourself, you're inundated. You're just overwhelmed with it.
That's right.
Coming to someone who understands and knows how to pull out the important aspects of that data is very important. Andrea, tell us about yourself. Why is it that you do what you do?
Well, my grandfather had cancer, and that was in the 70s. He had prostate and colon cancer, and he lived for 20 years after that. He lived to be 92 years old, and it really wasn't talked about in my community. Folks really didn't talk about it. It was called the Big C, you know, hush, hush. And so at the end of his life, his cancer had returned, and he didn't say anything to anybody. And I felt that was ashamed as I was getting older and having my children. I thought, gosh, that's a shame. He couldn't even speak about it. So I was really interested in it, and I was interested in getting people to be educated and wanting to talk about those things, that it isn't taboo. And so that's the reason why I began in this work. I love it. I do not have any hard times of getting up in the morning and going to work and greeting folks and making them know that this journey, that they're not going to travel it alone, that there's somebody there for them, that we can get them through it. I always tell patients, no matter what the outcome is, we're going to get you through this, you know. And you're going to have a life after this. And I think with that hope, folks really feel like they can combat this because it's scary. And so that's what brings me, it brings me to the table every time with patients.
In terms of the financial assistance that's available through this program, is that assistance specifically for the transportation or the lodging, or what can that be used for, and how does a person qualify for that assistance?
It depends on the resource. So there could be some national some national nonprofits that we refer to, and they have their own guidelines, such as how much money they can make over a year, what they need to turn in, and I will help them with their forms. And it really varies. From the American Cancer Society, we don't always have a lot of direct financial assistance, but we have access to lots of help. Sometimes it's they are cancer specific, so sometimes they can only help if you have pancreatic cancer, because there are some organizations that might have seen a gap in that and wanted to help. And sometimes they will help every type of cancer, but only if they are in active treatment. Or it's really hard to say because they're so different.
Right.
We also have some programs also. We have the Hope Lodge here in Atlanta. We have Hope Lodges around the country for people to stay out of if they live 20 miles or more away from their homes in order to come in and get their treatment. And so we have that. That's free. Patients don't have to, pay for that. It's a beautiful place to stay. It's like almost like a resort for cancer patients. You have to be pretty well to go in there. And you have to have your social worker and your doctor say it's okay for you to stay there while you go through your treatment. We have Road to Recovery, which helps patients get back and forth to their treatments for radiation and chemotherapy. We have Reach to Recovery, which is a program for women who have breast cancer, and we have volunteers that come out and visit the women and help them get through their treatment and their diagnosis and give them little goodies like a pillow and things like that. What else do we have?
I have wigs available, so if a patient can't afford a new one, those are fun days because I get to give them a brand new wig and they're and they're so happy when they leave, because some women, when you lose your hair, I would say most of them, it can be pretty hard, but once they have their wig and they can smile again, it's really nice. So we do help them out in different ways, such as what she was saying, and the Hope Lodge. I don't know if people really know how great it is. It's here. In Atlanta. We have them across the country, and it is completely free for as long as they have treatment. So someone could be there for 3 months after they have a bone marrow transplant.
And where is it located?
It's on the Emory campus.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. Obviously, there are many things going on within the society. What special event might be coming up that you'd like our listeners to
Making be Strides.
Tell us about it.
Breast cancer. It's our annual walk, and we have women who come from all over to raise money for breast cancer, for research, and it's just wonderful. There's lots of survivors there, team captains who are survivors, and we just do a wonderful job with it. So that is, I believe, in October. And if you go on to our website, you'll see it, www.cancer.org. You will find it. Just look for Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. We just finished up with our relays, and that's the Relay for Life. We raise money for all types of cancers through walking. And you can go to the website and find out about that for next year. And so those are the types of things we're doing.
Tell us if you can. We love stories on this show, and both of you or either, it doesn't matter, can speak to this. Can you give us a heartfelt story of a particular individual that you were involved in?
I recently had a mother and daughter team diagnosed at the same time. both elderly into the community. That secret seed nobody wants to talk about. I met them in their doctor's office. Both had breast cancer. The mother was 98 years old.
Oh, wow.
And very inspiring her daughter through it, who was 75. So they needed a lot of help. They lived in a home that didn't have, needed some repairs, a lot of repairs. So I was able to link into DeKalb County's program. They have a grant program to help with repairs. I was able to get them some transportation through the elder services in DeKalb. I was able to let them know about Meals on Wheels so they could get food into the house. I also was able to link them into some of the support groups at DeKalb. So they come out to an annual support group now, I mean a monthly support group, to help with that hush-hush about cancer and get them to talk about it. And they're just such wonderful women who just now are educating their community about cancer, about breast cancer, and educating their children, you know, about it, and their grandchildren, because the type of breast cancer they had is most likely that one of their children will have it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's a beautiful story, because the outcome is education. It's understanding your own body, your own needs, not being afraid to tap into the resources that are out there that folks are sometimes afraid and embarrassed that they need. And I say, you know, whatever you need, you go for. You don't sit back and just go through it by yourself. There's no need to do that.
Well, as you said, that is a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. Erin?
I have so many, but I will share one. I recently received a call from a woman in California, and she is 85 years old. She has pancreatic cancer, and she wanted to come to Atlanta to stay with her daughter while she had treatment. And she was worried about transportation because she couldn't drive and didn't know how she was going to even feel after treatment. And she was getting radiation at Northside in Alpharetta. And she said that she had called some transportation places and they told her it was going to be $75 each way. And she needed about 5 weeks of radiation, and you go Monday through Friday for several weeks. So it's at least 25 to 30 trips. And if it's 75 one way, that would have been $150 each day. So she didn't have that, and she was very upset. And she was referred to me, and I said, "Well, actually, we have volunteers through our Road to Recovery program in North Fulton." I said, "Let me see what they can do," and they were able to cover every single one of her rides completely free. They're volunteers that would pick her up and went. And I talked to her a couple weeks ago, and she was gardening outside of her house back in California. And she said, "Erin, if it wasn't for the American Cancer Society and those volunteers," she said, "I don't even think I would have been able to have treatment," because her daughter couldn't take her.
Great. And again, I have to emphasize to our listening audience, there are resources. There are things and people who can assist. You have to ask, and you have to ask and keep asking till you find the right combination and the right situation. That is a fabulous story. Thank you for sharing. As we start to close, I'd like to ask one of you. I'll look to Andrea, allow you to answer this. If our listening audience might have just recently been diagnosed with cancer or is fearful, where do they begin? Tell us at how would they start this process at a high level?
I think the first thing they need to do is call the 1-800-ACS. That's the most important place to start, because that will link them into their local ACS division. And there may be a navigator there to help them, which probably will be. And also to have a conversation with their family, because they're going to need family support, or their church, or their neighbor, or whoever is in their life, and just divulge what's going on to them. I think also they need to have a conversation with that doctor who diagnosed them and find out what the treatment plan is so they can prepare and get the things that they need to get through it.
Great. Certainly appreciate that. As we close, we'd like to give the contact information. So how could our listening audience reach either you personally or directly to the home to the national office?
Well, first of all, the 1-800 number for the American Cancer Society is 1-800-227-2345, and it is answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And also, if you go to cancer.org, there is lots and lots of good information on there. And to reach me at Northside, you can call our nurse navigator line. And again, this is Aaron Elliott. The number is 404-300-2800.
And for DeKalb Medical, to reach me, Andrea Williams, the American Cancer Society Resource Navigator, is the main cancer center. That number is 404-501-EASY. So that makes it really easy. And it's also 404-501-3279, which is the same.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Aaron, for being our guest. We certainly enjoyed it. It was a great show.
Okay. Thank you for having us.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
We appreciate
and
it.
We'll do it again, okay?
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, that's it for today. We certainly, once again, thank both our guests for being here. We encourage our listening audience to tap into the resources that the American Cancer Society has. We ask that you consider contributing to the American Cancer Society. As always, we want to remind our listening audience that if they want to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.